How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks for making us part of your daily routine, Monday through Friday. And today, on this Thursday show, we are celebrating the Boston Celtics 108-97 win over the Chicago Bulls. A home team finally won in this series. Celtics take a 3-2 lead after being down 2-0. Big night for the Celtics. Lots of guys stepped up. Guys that we might not have expected, like Kelly Olynyk, Terry Rozier. Of course, Al Horford was awesome and continues to be awesome and shut people up. Isaiah Thomas had some big plays. But on the defensive end? Huh? Question mark? And Avery Bradley was just carrying this team for a long time. We're going to talk about it. Me, John Corrales, along with Sam Jam Packard. We're the Rain and Jays. Brought to you today by SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app, and later on in the show, we'll give you $20 off one of your first SeatGeek purchase. Stay tuned for that, but let's just dive right into this, because huge performance by the Boston Celtics, huge fourth quarter by the Boston Celtics, Sam, and not the typical way the Celtics dominate the fourth quarter. It was a much more of a team effort tonight, and it's just a lot of guys pitched in.
Yeah, this was a kind of a bizarre game for the Celtics, because they didn't really ever get anything great going on offense. They had so many opportunities after opportunity, open shot after open shot, and they really couldn't knock anything down. But in that fourth quarter, it felt like everybody kind of stepped up. They made some great plays on the defensive end and were able to go on that run. But you're right, they got contributions from Kelly Olynyk in that fourth quarter, Al Horford, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas making great defensive plays. So I don't know. I think it goes back to a question that I think we talked about on the last podcast, is this the Celtics playing well, or is this the Bulls just being so bad that, like, even a game in which the Celtics shoot, what do they end up with, 43% and only 22% from three, they still end up winning, and kind of winning easily in the end, because it felt like the Celtics were playing better the entire night, and if they ever just started making shots, they would eventually kind of pull away, and that's what seemed to happen in the fourth quarter. But this is kind of a wild ball game in which no one really played, or at least you just Isaiah didn't play that well, and no one really emerged as like playing that well until that fourth quarter when they did pull away.
Well, we had little stretches of people who played well. Like Avery Bradley early on was on fire. And in the first half, Bradley was 8 of 12 for 17 points, and he finished with 24 overall. So he had 17 of his 24 in the first half. Kelly Olynyk had a nice stretch in the second quarter. We had 8 points on 3 of 5 shooting. So he carried the team for a stretch in the second quarter. In the third quarter, spread it out. Al Horford, Avery Bradley again in the third. Isaiah starts to come alive. And then in the fourth, Horford, big, huge, clutch fourth quarter. 11 points in the fourth, 3 of 3 shooting, 5 of 5 from the line. In fact, the Boston Celtics set a team record, a perfect 23 of 23 from the line. They also set a team record, by the way, for missing 37 three-pointers. I mean, no, I'm sorry, 31 three-pointers. They were 9 of 40 from three. So, a little good, a little bad, but good contributions all the way around. Let's just give Al Horford his due here. 21 points, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. What a huge, huge, huge game for him. And at the beginning of the series, even when he had a good game, people are like, oh, where's Al Horford? And it's nice. I think it's kind of a vindication to see him come up with an 11-point fourth quarter and to have a big, huge second half where he had 19, 4, and 4 in the second half when the Celtics needed him to step up. And he did a lot of great things, and he'd been doing a lot of great things throughout the series, but it's the scoring and the obvious stuff that make people shut up. And he did the things to make people shut up tonight.
The thing, yeah, you're absolutely right. He burned Mirotic in the post. He did the kind of the smaller scoring things. He knocked down a couple of threes. But the thing that I was most impressed with Al Horford is his playmaking in the pick and roll scenarios when he was the roll man and kind of caught the ball. All and were in those 4-on-3, and just his ability to make the quick pass to the corner for a knockdown three, or to kind of be in the post and wait for cutters and make passes that way. I just thought it was the kind of the perfect display of his playmaking ability and his kind of just a ability to kind of make those around him better. He was fantastic tonight, and in a night when Isaiah wasn't knocking down the outside shot and wasn't being like really making that much for himself at the rim, because the Bulls were giving him so much attention and kind of really packing the paint. For him to be able to kind of throw it to the guy, the role man on that pick and roll, and for him to be able to make plays and create offense out of that is extremely valuable for the Boston Celtics. And it's something that they were very much lacking in the series last year against the Hawks, because the Hawks would blitz Isaiah Thomas and there'd really be no incentive for him to give it up to the anyone setting a pick for him, because you just know they weren't going to make a play. But with Al Horford, with his basketball IQ, with his athleticism, he really just is constantly making the right decision and setting the Celtics up to score points, which is exactly, I feel like I've been harping on this the past two games. They just need to keep scoring, because the Bulls offense is just not very good at this point. So to have Al Horford in there kind of being that second facilitator is huge for them. And is the major reason why they kind of pulled away in the fourth quarter.
This is where Al Horford is the difference that Chicago doesn't have. Al Horford, when Isaiah Thomas has a 1-for-10 from three shooting night and a 6-of-17 night overall, still managed to score 24 points, still managed to have 11 in the fourth quarter, still managed to be impactful in a lot of ways, 8 assists. Marcus Smart, who had 8 assists, 4 assists, 5 rebounds for Isaiah Thomas. First of all, let me just say this. When Isaiah Thomas gets you 5 rebounds, you lose. Like, you don't even have to finish the game. If you let Isaiah Thomas get 5 rebounds on you, you lose automatically. It's like if Isaiah Thomas wins a jump ball on you, blow the whistle, shut the lights off, send everybody home, you lose. You can't let the smallest guy on the floor do that to you. But Horford is the guy that can pick up some slack and make other guys on the team better. Find guys cutting back door. Like there was a play in the fourth quarter where he found Jay Crowder. And I think Crowder got fouled, but just making the right play, reading the plays like he has in the past few games, knowing that if you roll in certain scenarios, he just reads it right and he goes right away and he gets rewarded. He knows exactly when to pop. He knows exactly when to pass. That's why we keep saying whenever he has the ball in the post, cut to the damn basket. He wants to find you. And Brad Stevens postgame said, our offense flows through Al Horford's passing. He is one of the best passing bigs in the league. The AP's Brian Mahoney said, he tweeted out, there are probably about maybe two or three bigs, I think he said, in the league that can make the passes that Al Horford was making tonight. He is a facilitator. That's always been his game. That's what he wants to do. And tonight he was able to do that extremely well. So for your big to have 9 assists, to be your team leader in assists, is amazing. And Chicago has nobody that can do that. Their offense is basically give it to Butler and hope he scores. And side note, Dwayne Wade had an amazing game. 26 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists. The Celtics survived the Dwayne Wade game. He has one of these games in him in the series, and the Celtics survived it. But there's nobody that they can turn to facilitate for anybody else now that Rondo's gone. So just amazing. And if I sound a little bit more hyped about Al Horford, it because this is finally a justification for bringing him on, giving him the money, and all of that stuff that a lot of people out there that were just running their mouths early on, this is the reason why he's here. And it's the scoring is a little bit higher than he's done all season, but this is how he's played all season long. So it's really, really great to see.
Yeah, in the 3 wins over the Bulls, he's averaged 18, 9, and 6. And it kind of makes sense that his scoring has gone up in the playoffs. You just think about it, the game kind of slows down, and the importance of being solid in the half-court offense definitely becomes a kind of a key factor there in the playoffs. So you can understand why he becomes more important. I thought that Celtics defense, they played pretty well for the majority of the game. You mentioned Dwayne Wade having a good game, but I think the bigger story is Jimmy Butler only scoring 14 points, only attempting one free throw, and it felt like he basically disappeared in the entire fourth quarter. I just didn't like. I understand that the Celtics were giving him a lot of attention, and sometimes doubling him and tripling him, but. It just felt like if he's going to make his claim to be kind of the best player in the series type thing, you can't completely fade away in the fourth.
Yeah, the Celtics defended him really, really well in the fourth. 2 field goal attempts, no free throws in the fourth. Like you said, 1 free throw for the game. He, in the second half, just 6 field goal attempts in the entire second half for 6 points. That's crazy. And I wonder if Wade taking 18 shots has something to do with that. Isaiah Cannon had 11 shots, 6 of 11. He actually had a nice scoring game. But, yeah, Butler, if this was going to be the game. If he was going to do anything and have a big game, this was going to be it. But the Celtics did a good job staying in front of him, keeping him out of the lane, forcing him to take tough shots. I think not everybody's going to have a great game. We look at what he did, and he shot better than most of the Celtics tonight. Just one of those nights where it just didn't work for him. And I guess if Chicago just doesn't have the personnel to really account for that, even with Wade's big game. So, tough night for Butler, but great defense by the Celtics, and I agree. Like, it's so weird to say, because you can say you have to do this, but if you're Jimmy Butler, you're not Kevin Durant, you're not LeBron. There's really only like 2 or 3 guys in the league that can impose their will on a team. Butler is not that guy. He's really, really good. He's in that next tier of star players and can take over games a lot of the time, but not every time. So good for the Celtics. Good on the Celtics for managing to keep him in check, and they had a great plan for him, and it worked.
And I think a large part of it was just kind of a defensive mastery of Avery Bradley, because there were some times when he would just deny Butler even getting the basketball in the post and just making Jimmy Butler's life incredibly difficult. And I do think the fact that Butler's been playing over 40 minutes a game for the majority of this series and going up against Avery Bradley, he's probably tired. So kind of the effort needed to take over the game, especially when the Celtics are directly game planning to avoid that, becomes incredibly difficult. And you're right, he's not on those top tiers of players who can do it every single game. But you got to credit the Celtics and especially Avery Bradley just for making his life incredibly difficult. The Bulls were doing some interesting things with trying to get him some open looks, especially when they could get a switch with him onto Isaiah. They had him kind of moving around off ball more, and they were really trying to get a lot of kind of feeds into him, into the post, or just alley-oops towards him, just trying to abuse the size that way. They did the same thing when Avery Bradley was still guarding him, but Bradley just did a really good job contesting and denying those entry passes and making life difficult for him. And if you're the Bulls after that, really, what are you going to turn to on offense? They had to go to Anthony Morrow, come off the bench. And I knew he was going to come in and score because I feel like Anthony Morrow always kills the Celtics, but he had 8 points. Robin Lopez was good in that third quarter, but you can't really rely on Robin Lopez to do that. Mirotić, I don't know what he's doing half the time. He just takes the most absurd threes. It really comes down to a lack of just general scoring for the Chicago Bulls. And so if Butler's not having a game, even if Dwayne Wade scores his 26 points, there's just not a lot the Bulls offense can do.
No. And this is why Rondo was so important, because Butler can go one-on-one and score. He can do that. Mirotić can hit open shots, but you need somebody to set that up. Lopez can hit open shots, and then other guys can chip in from time to time. But you need a guy like Rondo to set them up and get them in the right place. And what he was doing in the first couple of games of the series, disrupting the Celtics offense, getting out in transition, and having them score easily on fast breaks. But they're an eighth seed for a reason, because they can't sustain some of these things. They can't, when one of those things, when 2017 Rajon Rondo is the key to your success, that's a problem for your team. So here we are. The Chicago Bulls, shockingly the eighth seed, aren't really that good. So that's that. So the Celtics now go to Chicago on Friday night to potentially close out this series. And so, Celtics fans in Chicago or Celtics fans waiting in Boston, you will have an opportunity to buy tickets. You want to go to that game to see the Celtics potentially close out that series, or if Chicago manages to win that game at home, stave off elimination, there's a game Sunday at the Garden to settle this thing once and for all. So go and download the SeatGeek app or get on the web and go to their website, because SeatGeek has basically taken all of the confusion out of buying tickets. They make it easy for you to find the best deal. They have completely changed the game when it comes to buying tickets. Now, I have the SeatGeek app. I don't always need to buy tickets, but when I do, I go to them first because they have made everything easy. Open up the app and you'll see right away, the first thing you'll notice is everything is color-coded. Red, yellow, green, that immediately draws your eye to, oh, there's a green dot in this section. I'm going to go look at these sections, because they have aggregated everything. They have gone to all those other ticket sites. They've done all the price comparison, and they tell you what the best possible deal is. On top of it all, you click on that seat, it shows you what the view is. So if you're a Boston fan, you want to go to Chicago, you've never been to Chicago for a game, You go, you click on that seat, it'll show you what you're going to see before you even get there, so you know what you're getting into ahead of time. And SeatGeek wants to get you the most bang for your buck, so they give every ticket a grade based on its value. So you immediately get to see the underpriced seats, and you can find the best deals that fit your budget. I'm telling you, SeatGeek is the way to go. And on top of all of that, that's just right there, that's enough. That's a great app. On top of all of that, our listeners get a $20 rebate off the first ticket purchase. So here's what you have to do. Download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab. Click add a promo code. Enter LO Celtics. And then you buy your ticket. SeatGeek sends you back $20 after you've made the purchase. So you want to go to Chicago, or you want to go to Game 7, or you want to go to Game 1 against either the Wizards or the Hawks? Download the app, enter LO Celtics, buy your tickets, $20 back, boom, done, sealed, signed, sealed, delivered. That's that. So I think you should probably start looking, if you want to catch a game on the road, I think you should probably start looking in the Washington area. I'm just saying, don't quote me on that, but I think that's probably what you should be looking at. And I'll tell you that the Verizon Center sucks, so just know what you're getting into. But SeatGeek will help you in that way.
Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flo.
When Flo flows, she flows in the know. Mind ruminates, the wraiths, shown them all, I heed the call. Seeing the rest, I choose the best. Sometimes it's ours, sometimes it's not. When the fox walks, is it called a fox trot? That's a real question.
Compare Progressive direct rates with competitors' rates. Visit progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All right. Back to the game. I kind of want to get into the from the Chicago side. Well, actually, we just did the Chicago side. Screw that. I'm done with that. I want to get into post-game a couple of things.
Go on.
I will say, okay, the first thing I want to say, it was fun to see the Isaiah and Avery Bradley post-game press conference, because Isaiah was joking, and they were asked about Isaiah's defense, and Isaiah immediately started joking around, saying, I'm first team. And then as soon as Avery Bradley started saying, no, he's underrated, and he does it, Isaiah was like, no, don't hype me up. They say I'm the worst defender in the league. I'm fine with that. Just let that happen. So I want to get your take on this, Sam. I think we've increasingly seen, after the tragedy that I really think threw the team off in games 1 and 2, we're increasingly seeing Isaiah, the trademark smile, having some fun, getting back into the routine. And I know he's still dealing with this on a personal level. I know this is still killing him. I know that this is still incredibly difficult. But on the court, in this sanctuary that we keep talking about, I really think that Isaiah getting back to himself a little bit has done wonders for this whole team.
No, it definitely feels like he has the swagger back. And it was the funniest thing to me about that question is that you could tell whenever the reporter started to ask it about his defense, he kind of covered his face a little bit and he was smiling like he knew he's about to like make jokes. He was about to go off. And that's just like, it's good to see, just considering where he was to start the series. But you can tell that swagger's there just even when in the game, when he either when he gets fouled and like kind of goes into his like snarl flex like Mighty Mouse mode, or when he finishes over Isaiah Cannon and immediately starts talking shit. Like, you can tell he's just playing basketball like he knows how to play basketball, and he's definitely more comfortable. His teammates seem more comfortable, so it's just a very good sign. For one, just Isaiah Thomas, for his own kind of mental health and sanity, nice to see that he's kind of feeling good again. But in the basketball impact, it's good because the Celtics feel like it feels like they're having fun again and playing much more comfortably.
Yeah, and then the other thing that happened post game was the question from the question of of Fred Hoiberg, after sitting there and stammering his way through the press conference, he was asked, "Did you see Isaiah carry the ball tonight?" He immediately said, "Nope," and got up and walked off, which to me made waiting and recording this show late all the more worth it. That was my favorite moment of the series by far.
It was fantastic, and all credit has to go to one of my mainest men, former WEI colleague of mine, Josue Pavon, for asking the question. And he just made Fred Hoiberg look so silly and so just kind of upset. And classic, like, Cameron to Bill O'Reilly, like, "You mad? You said made such a big deal about this after game four, and now you get asked about it once, and you immediately have to leave the podium." It was awesome. It was a fantastic moment. It just was laugh out loud funny, and I have to give a lot of respect to Josue for bringing that up again, because I know he thought it was really just absurd that Fred Hoiberg brought it up after game four. So good on Josue for holding him accountable and asking him about it again after game five.
So great, so great. Before we get to Jam's junk drawer, I want to make an announcement that the Locked On Celtics podcast, me, you, Sam, and Jay King, will be doing a Reddit Ask Me Anything on Sunday at noon on the Celtics subreddit. So if you are a Reddit user, go on the Celtics subreddit, which is our Boston Celtics, and on Sunday at noon, the three of us will be on there answering all of your questions, anything. Ask us anything, and we'll be there. So want to make sure we get that announcement out there for you guys. Definitely check that. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for that because I've seen these Ask Me Anythings. They can get crazy. And so that's going to happen Sunday at noon. Okay, Sam.
Hold on. Before we get to the junk drawer, I want to just talk about Jay Crowder. He was 2-for-11 from the field tonight, 0-for-5 from 3. Obviously, he has not been great shooting this series. But I thought he actually played outside of that shooting, I thought he played a pretty good game and made some really big plays, especially in that fourth quarter, getting himself to the free throw line, scoring 4 points there. He still ended the game with 8 rebounds. He was a +9 to end the game. He had two kind of blocks that were they occurred in the first half, but I thought they were important at the moment. So obviously I'd like to see him shoot better, but it's just like it's so much like him to still make an impact and still play very tough. So it's kind of like a tip of the cap, wag of the finger at the same time. It's like, shoot, but you know what? Keep doing like kind of the little things that are good for winning right now.
I'm glad you brought that up. I will admit I overlooked that in my excitement. I'll say Crowder has not had the best series overall on an offensive side, but I'll go out on a limb, and maybe I'm being a little over ambitious, but screw it, I'll go out on a limb here. I'm gonna say he'll be the difference maker in Game 6. I think him getting to the line is really important. I think the free throws that he earned are going to settle him down a little bit. And I think maybe he's been rushing things. Maybe he hasn't felt entirely comfortable. And who knows? Maybe he's dealing with an injury or something that we don't know about. But I don't think so. I think he's just not been playing particularly well on the offensive end. So I think going out there in that fourth quarter and getting those free throws will get him into a better mindset. Although the free throws, I'm sorry, came in the third quarter, but getting himself into that mindset and seeing the ball go through and kind of figuring that all out. I think if he gets the types of looks that he has been getting, I'm going to say that in game six, those shots start falling.
And if you can even just get one other player to kind of start knocking down, if you just have one of their volume shooters start knocking down threes, like the Celtics should have probably won this game by 20 points if they shot at all, like just what their average percentage from three, because they had open looks from three the entire game. The Bulls were just leaving people in the corner. Mm-hmm. They had so many opportunities. And if you just think the Celtics kind of returns to the law of averages, if you believe in that at all, it really feels like they should their offense should really start clicking, and they won't have to kind of just kind of battle teams for three quarters before pulling away. They could really build up a lead early. So I think that's right. If Jay Crowder comes out and hits like three of four from three, it's a huge difference, and just completely changes the kind of how dynamic their offense can be.
Yep. Yep. I think so. All right. You ready? We're doing the junk drawer.
This is a junk drawer starting after midnight, so you guys got to bear with me on this one. But let's start it with I love the energy I think it was end of the first quarter and second quarter with the Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, Kelly Olynyk lineup. I think that rotation, Brad Stevens has really worked that out well. And those three guys, usually with Crowder and Horford or Crowder and Bradley, have been fantastic. I really wanted those three guys to have a nickname, but I typed that out at the time, but they really didn't do anything in the rest of the game, so no nickname for them.
Can I just interject? Kelly Olynyk dropped a fool with a pick. Awesome. That was awesome.
Fantastic. You know who else dropped a fool? Terry Rozier with a steal and slam over Feliciano. That was awesome.
Dope.
A guy who probably has less than 10 dunks in his entire career. Just absolutely yamming. And we know the dude can jump. He's like one of the best sky-high jumpers in terms of rebounding. So it was nice to see him just like sprint out on the break and yam it in Felicio's face. That was fantastic. Me and Jay King probably said the phrase about that life 95 times on last night's podcast. So I'm not going to say Kelly Olynyk's about that life, but I'm going to say he's about that action, boss, because – he did not appreciate getting a hard foul from Anthony Morrow, and he went right to him. And I'm all for aggressive Kelly. You guys know my feelings on Kelly Olynyk showing any bit of emotion, and that was just really fun to see.
As I said on Twitter, he's a boot that life.
He is quite a boot that life. He's not sorry about anything these days.
Not sorry. I'm a boot that life, eh? Sorry, Canada.
Let's see. There was a nice stretch there in the third quarter where Marcus Smart completely owned Dwayne Wade on like four consecutive possessions. That's fun to see because I hate Dwayne Wade and he's a terrible human being. And watching him succeed is one of the worst feelings in the world.
Keep it going.
At halftime, our CSN stats guy Max Lederman tweeted that the Celtics were 3-0 in the regular season when they shot more than 25 threes in the first half. Such an obscure stat with small sample size. But they improved to 4-0, so shout out to Max Lederman for that. Another wacky three-point stat. There's the worst field goal percentage from three-point line in a win the Celtics had for the entire year. Their third worst for the entire season. So like we said before, you would have to imagine that that's going to get better. Here's kind of a wacky idea, but I saw an ad for the NBA Awards, and I know that Drake is going to be hosting, but that just seemed like it was going to be super corny. And I was thinking, who would be the best person to host the NBA Awards show? And I'm thinking it would be like Norm Macdonald circa 1995 when he was really on like that OJ kick. That would be hilarious. That guy, if you've ever seen him when he hosted the ESPYs, oh man, he just like killed the entire audience and just made really, really off-color jokes. So I think Norm Macdonald would be the perfect host for the NBA Awards.
Huh. Who would be the perfect host for the NBA Awards? Shit.
Norm Macdonald's actually a pretty terrible answer because I don't think he watches basketball whatsoever. But yeah. I feel like you need someone who's willing to roast all of the players in front of their faces in the room.
Yeah, who would that be? I'm completely drawing a blank.
Quite right. It's not how the junk drawer works. It's not about thinking. It's about random observations. So if you guys have an idea, definitely tweet at us. Use the hashtag Raining Jays. Fred Hoiberg is probably the most milquetoast like boring motherfucker I've ever seen talk. It just, he's like, just his half game, his sideline interviews is just like, oh my God, this guy sells insurance for a living and he really hates his job and he doesn't really like his wife and he just doesn't complain and he just seems so infuriated with the world. And he just is like the most middle management dude ever. And it's just, it's kind of sad at this point.
He's the guy that should work at Inatech and complain about PC load letter, but never do anything about it.
That, like, his life is just filled with TPS reports.
Absolutely.
It's kind of sad for him, but entertaining for us when someone like Josue Pavon comes in and tweaks him a little bit. All right, wrapping up here. Amir Johnson doing a great job as cheerleader. There was an awesome clip tonight where Avery Bradley had a tip-in, and Amir Johnson's pants fell down right as it was happening. That's just comedy gold. That's always going to be funny. Last two things is Dwayne Wade said after the game that there was no hot water in the showers in the visiting locker room.
Thank you, Red Auerbach.
Yeah, that's just the ghost of Red coming back. Just fantastic stuff. I mean, I wouldn't want the Celtics to do something like that intentionally, but if it happens, I'm all for it. And then finally, kind of on a more serious note, I just want to kind of give a shout out to the fine people who worked at ESPN who happened to get laid off today. There were some great NBA centric people in there, specifically Ethan Strauss and Justin Verrier, who did some great work. And it's too bad they got laid off, but I imagine they'll get hired again soon. But it's never fun to see kind of people in the media whose work you respect lose their job. So just kind of shout out to those people. And hopefully good luck for them moving forward.
Yeah, I want to say something about that because this was today what happened at ESPN was a bloodbath. And I addressed a lot of this stuff on my Twitter. If you want to go back through my timeline throughout early Wednesday morning, not early Wednesday, like basically from like 10 to noon, I talked a lot about this, but there's been a lot of greed and mismanagement over the course of time from cable companies who continue to force us to pay for a lot of channels that we didn't want and give us huge, huge cable bills so they can keep padding their pockets. And what's ended up happening was the second that the option for cutting the cord existed, people cut the cord. So their greed led to a lot of people cutting the cord, and that in turn led to a lot of changes at media companies because they weren't getting the cable fees that were coming in. And then ESPN, with its misguided strategy, has cost a lot of good people their jobs. And first of all, I want to say there are people celebrating people losing their jobs. That's bullshit. Don't do that. Don't be that person. Okay. Maybe some people who lost their jobs, you might not think that they were good. Maybe whatever you think, that's your opinion. These are people with real lives who depend on these checks to take care of their families. This isn't like a multimillionaire athlete getting cut and still getting their money. That's not how this works. And I just want to say that the bad decision making on management's part over and over and over again has really cost a lot of people their jobs, their money, their livelihoods. Put a lot of people in unnecessary positions, and I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. But this is a brutal industry. It's as brutal, almost as brutal as the sports that we all cover, and it's a very competitive industry. The sports journalism industry is very much like the sports that we cover because very few positions. They're highly coveted, and as soon as these things happen, there are people who sit there and say, oh, that's really terrible. And then they say, well, are they trying to fill those positions or what? And they put their resumes in and they'll be the first people to go work there. But that's why ESPN can get away with it. But I think what ESPN did, it's just it was not necessary. I wish there were better decisions that were made. And unfortunately, a lot of these really, really good people got caught up in that and lost their jobs. So lots of love out to them. I'm sure a lot of them will get jobs somewhere else, but maybe some won't. And that's just a shame. So hate to end it on that note, but I think it's really important to mention that. And again, if you guys want to hit me on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John, I'm happy to talk about that stuff. I'm not shy about it. And who knows, maybe things will change down the road. All right. That'll wrap it up. The Celtics have the Celtics have won a game five after forcing a game five. They are now going to Chicago to potentially win this in six. And it may not be the way we thought they'd get there, but a lot of people said Celtics in six. And that might be how this all ends. Celtics win game five, 108-97. Game six, Friday. We may do the same thing we did last week, where we don't do a show tomorrow night, the Thursday night show for Friday, and we might just do a post-game Friday show for you. So just stay tuned for that on Twitter. Again, join us Sunday at noon on the Boston Celtics subreddit for an Ask Me Anything and Ask Us Anything, and we'll see you there for that. Until then, thanks for listening. If you have subscribed to the show, please rate us 5 stars. Leave us a review. That's very, very helpful. If you're not a subscriber, search Locked On Celtics wherever it is you get your podcasts, whether it's Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, something else that I've never heard of, something in a different part of the country. I want to give shout outs to people who tweeted us from other parts of the world. I love the fact that we're global. Search for us there. If you're new to us, trust me, you will love it. So thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.